This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root Arts in Atlanta podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with two amazing arts educators, Molly Katzen and Kelly Trainer. How are y'all doing?
Good. Great.
Thank you for having us.
No, thank you all for being here. And what's great about this podcast is that it's rare to get a chance to talk to arts administrators, teachers in the classroom, because normally you all are teaching. So to be able to have this access to you all feels really great. And I'm glad to have you in today. So let's start with some general laying of the foundation. Talk about where you teach, your school system, and just kind of how you approach what you do.
Well, we're both Fulton County educators. I teach on the south side in College Park at Love T. Nolan Elementary School. It was established in 1974, I believe, and was all grades originally. But as the community grew, it was shrunk to K through 5. And that's how it has stayed for the last several years. I teach art every day except Wednesdays. On Wednesdays, I actually travel around South County to visit other art educators as a form of support and as sort of a mentor for them. But my classes are usually 45 minutes long, and I see every class once a week. So every kid gets art once a week at our school.
I teach at Mimosa Elementary in Roswell, Georgia, and Love T. Nolan, the same school as Kelly, down in College Park. And both my schools are Title I, which is somewhere that I've always wanted to be as an educator, in a Title I school, meaning that we serve populations who are not always as affluent as other populations, is probably the best way I would frame that. And my school, Mimosa, that's the school I'm at, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And at Mimosa, we have primarily Spanish-speaking students. We have over 1,100 students this year, and I'm one of two art teachers at that school. And on Wednesdays, I travel down to Love T. Nolan, where I teach classes for a day down there.
Both of you teach in Fulton County schools, mm-hmm. And Fulton County has always been an interesting county because of the split of the northern part of the county mm-hmm. and the southern part of the county. So can you talk about maybe how that split of, I guess, attention, resources, mm-hmm. All of the above sort of plays into how you approach teaching?
It's interesting that you bring that up, because they're truly, I mean, it is, the county is physically bisected by Atlanta Public Schools. So we're actually huge. We reach from Alpharetta, Johns Creek, really, all the way to Palmetto. And like I said, inside the perimeter is typically all APS. So, you know, it's funny because I think people feel like, or they believe that all the resources are sort of shared all around the county, and it doesn't quite work that way. And, you know, when we work in Title I schools, what that means monetarily is that the majority of the families there, say a single mom with one child, for instance, makes $14,000 a year or less. A two-parent home with three kids brings home maybe $2,500 a month or less. So it's part of our responsibility to make up for those disparities. And I think, God, this really is like a whole other podcast. You know, a lot of people get the wrong impression about schools like ours. They think that that we have lack of parent involvement, or there is a lack of care or understanding of the education of students, and that's really not it. We have a lot of really hardworking parents who are trying to make ends meet and literally do not have the time to devote to, you know, at school participation like parents are so lucky to be able to do in other parts of the county. That being said, you know, our budgets are usually really small, particularly for art. Art is all consumable. You know, we work with supplies that aren't going to be there at the end of the year. So it's one of the most expensive programs in any school. I find myself asking for donations or using really cool programs like Donors Choose to make sure that my kids have exactly the same or better arts education as any kid in the county or in the rest of the state.
So talk about some of those resources. What goes into arts education at the elementary school level? What do you need? What has to happen? What has to be in place for that to happen?
I'm lucky enough at Mimosa to have a principal who appreciates the arts and allocates a really generous budget for us. And the things that I use my budget on are materials that my students, without my class, would never have access to. For example, going to Walmart, you can get crayons and you can get pencils, but they don't have parents, they don't have access to after-school programs where they could use watercolors and paints and clay and printmaking and all of these things that really stretch an artist and let an artist experience different materials. So I try and order as many different things as I can, and I get my ideas from all different places as far as projects. But I can tell you that when I do order supplies and they get there in their brown boxes, it's like Christmas unwrapping everything and these new, shiny, beautiful art supplies. Mm. And my students are amazed at what they can do, and they always ask me, where did you get this? How did you learn how to use these? And you know, depending on who asks and what day it is, I'll come up with a different answer. But it shows me that they appreciate the different things they're being exposed to in my art classroom. I would also say that I am very appreciative of the use of technology that I get to use. We have several iPad carts at Mimosa where we can rent them and bring them into the classroom. And the students can use the iPads. Mostly I use them for my students to use for reference and different apps, but that's also a great way for them to be introduced to things that can help them create art.
Molly, let's dive deeper on that. So talk about the curriculum and maybe what you're teaching with or what you're teaching in general to your students.
Okay, sure. Our curriculum has a lot of components as far as materials and media that we should be teaching, and it's sectioned off into units. We have a printmaking unit, a ceramics unit, drawing and painting, and craft and mixed media. So the way that this benefits our students is that if we have one student who lives in one area and goes to one school, all of a sudden they move to another part of Fulton County, they'll still be given the same curriculum, and theoretically, it should be taking place in the same way so that they can kind of continue and to build upon those skills that they've been learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're really lucky to work in a county that takes art education seriously. Our goal in the art department specifically is not just to create the next generation of artists, but art patrons too. It's really important for us to make sure that our kids are exposed to art, appreciate art, and, you know, are interested in their adult lives in going out and partaking in the art scene. Our curriculum is really rigorous. It's K through five. We, like Molly said, we teach ceramics, drawing and painting, printmaking. Some grades get digital photography. Others, there's technology embedded into the curriculum as well, fourth and fifth grade. So it's really, and it, you know, it's also important for us to talk about art history, to expose students to as many different artists as we can. It's actually a requirement that we teach at least six artists every year, including a Georgia artist. And like she said, we talk about craft and fiber arts and multicultural art too. It's important for me, and I'm sure it is for Molly, to help our kids relate to the artist and the art that they're teaching or that we're teaching, and broadening the scope from just the traditional sort of standby artists.
I would agree with that. It's mm-hmm. it can be it's really easy to fall into the pattern of teaching these artists that everyone knows. For example, Vincent van Gogh, and everyone knows Starry Night, and we all love it and we appreciate it, but that's not all there is to art. And especially now in this day and age, that's not all there is to current and contemporary art. And having the benefit of being in Atlanta, in a city that's up and coming with artists and thriving with the art scene, it's important to bring these current contemporary artists to our students as well, not only from Atlanta, but from around the world, and artists that work in all different arenas. I love, for example, teaching street art to my students. I kind of view it as our generation's pop art, and I think that connecting it with pop culture for them really strengthens the ideas behind it and makes them appreciate street art and art in general a lot more.
Do you all have opportunities to bring local artists into the classrooms to speak to your students?
We try to. It's not – we have such busy schedules, it's not always easy to make those connections. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, we've talked about technology. So it's not – we like being able to bring real artists into the classroom, but it's not always plausible between our schedules and the artist's schedule or – us having time to make connections with people, but I was able, through the use of technology, to Skype with a landscape architect a couple years ago, and the kids really appreciated that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it is. Let's stay right there, though, and mm-hmm. talk about technology in the classroom, and in what way have you had to adjust how you teach art? Mm-hmm. Talk about that. And also, have you had to make the case for technology in your classroom when it comes to talking with principals or other administrators? How do you make that case?
I would say my principal and administrators are pushing me and my coworkers more towards technology. I know that there was a time where I wouldn't say I was adamantly against it, but it took a long time for me as an artist to come to terms with the fact that technology is part of the future of art. And I remember in college, I was a sculpture concentration, which is, you know, working with your hands and getting down and dirty with materials. So for me to wrap my mind around creating something on a computer was a big leap for me. But my students have helped me reconcile that, especially because they know how to pick up any piece of technology and they're instantly masters at it. So if I ever have trouble with something, I have a whole room full of people who can troubleshoot it for me. And I would say that iPads are the way of the future as far as how I use technology in my classroom. For example, right now with my fifth graders, I'm doing a project about community. And so we start off talking about what is a community? How are you a part of a community? And how can you show yourself through your community? And we began with using iPads and looking at Google Earth, which they were all very amazed by. All the places you could visit on there. And a lot of them looked at the places they were from in South America or in Mexico, and making that connection through community was really strong for them. So we're moving into now creating something based on what we saw through Google Earth and Google Maps. And that technology aspect has really strengthened the curriculum and strengthened the projects.
So technology is sort of a double-edged sword. You know, like Molly said, it's difficult for us to sort of relinquish that hands-on aspect of art and let our kids start embracing technology more. By the same token, technology opens up doors for us to expose kids to things that they wouldn't have been exposed to normally. Things like Google Art Project, which is just this massive curation of the most famous artworks from all over the world. You can even take virtual field trips. You can travel through the museum. You can curate your own gallery. Those are things that we never could have done without technology's helping hand. And I also, I love, like Molly said, using iPads in my classroom. I think it makes learning more engaging and more personal. I really like embedding assessments into presentations about artists so that I can see exactly what the kids are learning, what needs to be retaught. And those are things that you can do in any classroom. But it also, when you put a group of kids around an iPad, they know exactly what to do with it, and conversations start. They strike up this meaningful dialogue. They start to cooperate. It's a cool thing.
They're so engaged.
Yeah, they love it. I also really like using Twitter. It's a way that I can expose what's going on in my classroom and around Fulton County and just in arts education in general to people who would not normally have had a view into my classroom, that outside view. I like being able to show off what my kids are doing to all kinds of people. That's an important part of being an artist is publishing your work, is showing the world what you're doing. And, things like Twitter and Instagram and classroom blogs are tools that we can use to do that.
I have a blog, and that's my main way to communicate with what I like to call my stakeholders, which are the parents, my administrators, my community, and even people who I'm friends with who can take a glimpse into what every day in an art classroom is like. I use Twitter as well, and these platforms are great for art advocacy. As art teachers, we have to scream from the rooftops how important our classes are. And because if we're not lucky enough to have administrators who believe in us, then it's really up to us to put forth what we're doing and make it sound important and show that it is important. I love showing off what my students make, and then they can go home and access my blog or Twitter and show their families and share with their families what they're doing in the art room. So it's a great way to communicate and show what's happening.
You talk about making the case for art, and I think that leads very well into the expansion of STEM to STEAM. And I was wondering if you all could talk about any shifts that you all have been a part of or conversations that you all have been a part of as it relates to including art in that multidisciplinary approach to education.
I would say for me, STEAM really comes from the concept that as educators, we're teaching our students how to be creative thinkers and solve problems that we can't even imagine yet. That's something I heard a long time ago that really stuck with me. And that's what I try and do in my classroom. And I think STEM is the way of the future, but we have to advocate to stick the A for art right in the middle and make sure that that's a part of the global conversation. And we're teaching our students to think critically and be problem solvers and be innovators and create things that will help them in the future. And that comes from... No, I got lost. That comes from a place of including arts in with science, technology, engineering, and math. And it begins in the elementary art room with things as simple as learning shapes and connecting that to art, or learning how to create something in the artistic process by going from an idea to drawing it two-dimensionally, to drawing it three-dimensionally, to building it with your hands. Mm-hmm. And I think that 30 years ago, no one would have expected that today we walk around with a device in our pocket that has all of human knowledge inside of it. And knowing that that's how the world is now, who knows what's going to be the future for our kids. And it's up to us to teach them the skills to be able to cope with that and to be able to create and invent that.
The way that we teach art and the way that art is a beautiful thing. it sort of encompasses everything. Like Molly said, when we teach our students about geometric shapes or what a line is, when we talk about color theory, we're talking about science. When we use sketchbooks and talk about the creative process, we can link that to the writing process. And we're teaching our kids to be visually literate. To be able to look at pictures, look at the things that they're shown, the things that they're presented all day, every day, because, we're bombarded with images constantly. How to question them, how to interpret them, how to, build upon those images and make them their own. It's a cool place to be. I think that people are starting to realize that there should be that A in STEM. Because design is such an important part of our everyday lives. I mean, things are designed so well that they are integrated seamlessly into our environment, so it's not something that you think about all the time. But when you open up a kid's eyes to that, they realize, you're right, like my clothes, the design on my shirt, somebody drew that. The way this website looks, somebody designed that, somebody programmed it to look that way. I think art has a really great place in the STEAM landscape. I think it's an important part.
I think another important aspect of adding art to STEAM is that sometimes just plain old STEM can be viewed as being very, I want to say very serious and almost sterile. Science, technology, engineering, math. These are things that have rules that you have to follow, and there's these very kind of starch processes that you have to go through to get them. Not always, but a lot of the time. And I think art brings in that component of character growth and development, which is going to be just as necessary in the future as knowing math and technology and all of the other things as well. A big part of my teaching philosophy is teaching empathy. And I think that with technology, sometimes it's easy to get behind a screen and not make these emotional connections to people. But through art, it's the most emotional thing that you can do because you're expressing yourself. And that helps bridge the gap between those.
I think art teachers and educators and artists make a great case for, or they are able to relate how art complements science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. What advice or perspective would you give to the folks in those other areas about maybe making the case to, reach from their end into the art side of things, if that makes any sense? Like, I think you all do a great job of showing that relationship. What perspective would you want to lend to your peers on the other side of that?
When you think about science and engineering and math, they're universal. Numbers are universal. Theories are universal, and art is too. They're all languages. That everyone can understand across borders, across time.
Across cultures.
Across culture, absolutely. I think, like you said, art complements design and engineering.
I've always thought that art and science are the same thing. They're both ways to look at the world and come up with answers for the problems that you see. And science is looking at the external world, and art is looking inside. As far as telling other educators that it's easy to use art in your classroom, and art will support your subjects just as your subjects are supported in our classroom, it's as easy as mentioning, for example, when you talk about shadows, mentioning the value scale in light and dark. And by connecting those concepts with what your students are learning in art, it provides a more authentic education for them and builds upon the skills and really helps them remember it because they can relate it to different aspects of their life.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I was saying earlier, you know, teaching our kids to be visually literate, to look at the images that they see every day and to be able to pick them apart and really analyze them. I think using, you know, reproductions of Modrian's work or Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture in a math class so that they can identify angles, or using,
I like doing color theory in science.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good one. Talking about the light spectrum mm-hmm. in the color spectrum. Or sometimes with materials, I'll throw a little science in there with, I like using liquid watercolors and sprinkling salt on top. And then talking about how the salt will suck up the water because it's so thirsty. Or using oil pastels with a water resist and talking about how they don't mix together. I think probably one of our greatest science connections comes in our ceramics unit. And we can talk about chemical reactions and states of matter.
Another great way to integrate art into the general ed setting is by introducing kids to historical paintings as primary sources. You know, art for so long was strictly documentation. It was not as creative as it is today. It was all about recording history because the camera hadn't been invented yet. So artwork is a really amazing primary source for kids to be able to analyze the narrative and what was going on then, how people looked and what they were eating.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. Molly Katzen and Kelly Trainer here talking about art, art education, what life in the classroom is like in the elementary schools here in Atlanta, Fulton County school system, rather. So as we look forward or begin to think ahead about arts education and your role, what are some of your biggest challenges right now?
That's a great question. We have to be careful about how the business community shapes the education system in art and just across the board. You know, ed tech isn't just a buzzword anymore. It's an emerging market. Using words like innovative at the expense of a student's education or their developmental abilities is becoming an issue.
Could you please elaborate on that?
Absolutely. There, for instance, is a school that is moving towards an art curriculum that is entirely digitally based. They want to remove the foundational media like painting, drawing, ceramics, non-ceramic sculpture from the curriculum entirely and replace it with digital media. They have the money to do it, which is fantastic, but I think it's dangerous. I think without teaching a student how to hold a paintbrush or how to slip and score their clay or how to create a relief print and putting them in front of a computer and saying, hey, make this look like that, there's not the connection that they would have had in a regular art classroom.
it's kind of a slippery slope because all this technology, it's new and it's exciting and it keeps our kids engaged and interested, but we have to remember where our roots are, and our roots lie in those fundamental media that kids can use to be able to create art. So we have to keep that balance, and I would say that's a big challenge in the classrooms, is making sure that we tell people, you know, we're in there with our kids. We know that this is what is the best thing for them, mm-hmm. rather than listening to what is being allocated for us and being what we're being told to do. We have to fight for our kids and stand up for the curriculum that we believe will best serve them and make them the most successful.
Yeah, there's sort of always a fight for money. There's a fight for funding. And when you talk about technology, there are certain entities that are quick to give you money. But like I said, you know, when you integrate innovative practices at the expense of your students' you know, authentic learning, it becomes a problem. And even in the face of studies that show that students should be spending considerably fewer hours in front of screens, and you know, horror stories of school-age kids who are lacking motor skills because they're just used to holding tablets and swiping instead of, you know, playing with their toys and pretending.
The imagination.
Right.
I heard an anecdote from another educator recently that their students were taking a test, and one student put their hands on the paper and did that kind of like outward motion that we do to make something bigger on our phone, and they could not believe that they were seeing a kid try and zoom in on a piece of paper. So we really have to teach the difference and teach the different ways that you can use these avenues for creating, and that each one has its place, but to know the difference and to know when and where to use it.
It shouldn't be mutually exclusive. And it shouldn't, you know, you have to take into consideration the learning styles and the multiple intelligence of all of everyone. People learn differently. I am very visual. You can give me the most explicit instructions in the world, but if I don't have a picture of it, it's difficult for me to do it. So yeah, and that's something that I bring into my classroom. I try to be as conscious as possible about the different ways that students learn. And that I really honestly believe that everyone is smart. They're just smart in different ways. And I feel like the push for technology, if it goes too far, sort of eliminates those differences and caters only to certain groups of people, certain groups of students.
I absolutely agree with Kelly, and I think that the art room is a great place to provide each student to shine in their own way. You know, we do activities that involve movement so that those kids that have to move to get it out, they can express themselves. Or the kids who are visual, the kids who need to hear it, to mm-hmm. see it, to read it, mm-hmm. and I know Kelly's really great about that in her teaching, and that's something I really strive to do as well. I would say that's probably another challenge facing us, is maintaining the way that we can cater to all of our students. And what it comes down to is really making them successful people and teaching them the skills for that while they're little people, so that when they're big people, they'll grow up and they'll be decent and caring and capable and loving individuals who can contribute to the world in a meaningful way.
To that point, have you noticed any differences in the different, I guess, geographical fragments of your county? So you have North County, you have South County, and then you have Atlanta in the middle. Have you noticed any differences in either the students, the administration, the approach to what you all do in the classrooms? Do you talk to your peers at APS to see what they're doing and how you all are sort of all moving in the right direction? How do you all manage a school system that is sort of piecemeal, if you will?
I definitely try to keep in touch with educators in Atlanta Public Schools. The fine arts department coordinator at Atlanta Public Schools now was formerly a fine arts department coordinator in Fulton County Schools. So I have that connection. And we actually have had sort of a mass exodus in the last couple of years. It's sort of a separate issue, but based on pay. So Atlanta Public Schools are paying better. So a lot of teachers who are teaching in similar schools have left Fulton County to go to APS. And I know some of them and try to keep in touch with them. And like I said earlier, I am actually a North County kid. I attended Fulton County Schools myself. So I have seen firsthand the differences, the disparities. But I will say that when you walk into a school on the south side of Fulton County, or even in Central County, because Molly's school is really closer to North County, but it's sort of, you know, it's districting issues. when you walk into a school in South County, you know that there are issues that you're going to be dealing with that people in North County don't deal with. So you have, you know, there's a resolve in amongst educators in our schools that may not be present in other places, just purely by necessity. And you have to be resourceful. Like I said, I try to use as many different programs as I can to acquire the tools that I need. I've used Donors Choose a couple of times. It's an amazing organization that allows teachers to post projects for materials and supplies, equipment that they need. And, you know, the general public can fund those projects by, you know, just minimal donations. I actually procured 4 iPads for my classroom using Donors Choose this year and plan to use them again in the future.
Like Kelly, I also am a product of North Fulton Schools, and I knew that I wanted to be in Fulton County because I was so thankful for the education I received there. And I would say that the biggest difference is that I feel that in a South County school or in my North County Title I school, we don't have students who have the benefit of being able to take after-school classes at art centers, at community centers, where they can go and kind of have a supplement to their art education. Mm-hmm. And so for us, that just means that we have to push them harder and provide even more for them because they aren't exposed to it anywhere else. I was lucky enough to have parents who support the arts and therefore had me go to programs in art centers where I got to go after school mm-hmm. and continue my art making practices. And my students don't have that, so it becomes even more important for me to provide them with an all-encompassing and well-rounded artistic experience. I think that it's important to stay connected to the art education world, and for me that comes through attending the Georgia Art Education Conference as well as the National Conference, where I've presented and also attended workshops and connected with art educators from all over Georgia and all over the country. And it's kind of cool to see people who maybe I've communicated with online through blogging, through Twitter, meeting them in real life and swapping ideas and collaborating. And it strengthens the art ed community by keeping these connections alive. Mm.
Well, we talked about your biggest challenges. Let's turn that on its head and maybe talk about your biggest opportunities or maybe what you're most excited about when it comes to arts education. Kelly.
I'm excited about everything. I mean, I love my job. I love my job.
It's the best job in the world.
It really is. I mean, it's hard. It's a hard job. It's a lot of work. You don't have the weekends and the evenings and the summers like you thought you would. But it's just incredible. I mean, especially when you work with the elementary age kids, they're just incredible. They are kindergarten and first grade, especially. They are poised to soak up all the information that you give them. They're all little geniuses. I mean, it's incredible. It's such a honor to be a part of a kid's life when they're just little sponges. It's a huge part of their life, and I feel like for me and Molly, that if we can put the fire in them, if we can get them excited about art now, that's gonna stay with them, and that's something, you know, I'm always. I take pride in what I do, and I'm always trying to, I always review, I always reflect, I try to see how much better I can make this lesson this time around, or how much more efficient I can make my classroom run. I don't know. It's teaching is a beautiful thing. I'm excited too that I'm beginning to find out that if you just ask people for things, a lot of times they'll give them to you. It's amazing being able to reach out to the community, to the Woodruff Art Center, for example, or to our art department and say, you know, can I get a 3D printer? And getting one, or asking, can we have a day for the whole school to come to the High Museum of Art? And somebody saying yes, like, it's, you know, learning to ask for help, learning to ask people for their time or their resources, and getting a big yes is a really cool part of my job.
That's really a testament to art in Atlanta, and that we have so many people who are willing to help because they appreciate the value in what we do. And for me, I completely agree about lighting the spark of passion within the young learners, and they can grow up with it and foster it within themselves. A big part of what I like to provide my students is having them feel empowered as people, empowered to be able to make something, to create something, to have an idea, to follow through with the process. And these are skills that they'll need for their entire lives. So to show them how to do that and to help them work their way through it is a really special experience. And I feel the same way as you were. I'm so proud of them. And, you know, they'll when I see that they're proud of what they've accomplished, it makes everything worth it. And it brings some more goodness into the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, lastly, as we wrap up, I would love to get your perspectives of yourselves as artists in this particular context, because in many ways we look at artists in the world, in the public as, or I guess maybe through their work, through what they've created, and we interact with them in that way. But we don't often get a chance to talk with artists who are involved in our public this way. So I would love to get your perspective on yourselves as artists who are in this role in our society.
It's interesting that you bring that up, that you frame it that way, because, you know, a lot of times I feel like even most people feel like artists, a lot of artists are larger than life, and, you know, you really don't get to see them. You just see their artwork. So we're sort of like the in-between. we're sort of like a stepping stone, I guess. I think it's really important to show our students our artwork, to show them that we are artists.
Absolutely.
I think it's really meaningful for them too, so that it gives them a glimpse into, it just deepens the experience for them, I think, when they know that we are art makers and we're not just telling them to make art.
They're so impressed and amazed by it too. You made this? You made this? And then to say, yeah, I made this. And not so long ago, I was where you are, sitting in a classroom, yeah, learning. And if you keep at it, one day you can make something like this too.
The funniest thing is when you draw something, like if you're modeling for the students and somebody goes, you're an artist. It's just cool. It's cool. And I always say, so are you. If you're drawing, so are you. I want the art world to feel attainable, accessible.
Everyone's an artist.
And welcoming. Yes, everyone is an artist. And everything is art.
Yes. I think sometimes I view my classroom as my art creation. And I don't mean my classroom as far as, you know, all my signs and decorations and things like that. But, yeah, the whole environment and everything it encompasses. And it's something that I'm always thinking about how I can make better. What can I do? Like Kelly was saying, and my students are kind of an extension of my own artistic self, I guess you could say. I know that on a more personal level, this is my third year teaching, and I've noticed a big shift in my artwork, because before I started teaching, it was about a lot of kind of dark and macabre type of things, and you know, that place where all artists have been once before, at least. And now my art is full of love and light, and it's a lot more about growth. It's a lot more relatable. And I think that comes from a place of being able to do what I'm passionate about and feeling that within my soul and being able to express that back into the world and bring that love and light to my students.
Being super busy, you know, I don't get to make as much art as I used to. Constantly had paper in front of me drawing something for years and years. And despite the fact that I don't have as much time or the energy, really, to make my own art as often as I'd like to, I don't feel a void. I don't, because, you know.
You're still creating something.
Right.
Every day you're creating people who then themselves are becoming creators. It really is so hard to find that time, but every once in a while the inspiration will strike, and especially over our breaks. It's very nice to have the summer to not only lesson plan and do all of the things related to work, but get to kind of find that artistic experience back within ourselves. We have to keep at it, though, because I know that if I ever stop making art, then I'm not going to be that balanced and well-rounded person that I want to show to my students and I want my students to be. You have to find the balance between being an educator and an artist. And I've heard people say, you know, well, I'm an art educator first and foremost, I'm an educator, or I'm an artist first and foremost. But as art educators, we really truly have to be both.
Kelly Trainer and Molly Katzen, let all of our listeners know how they can find out more about what you all do in the classrooms, your blogs, your social media handles. Give all of that information.
I have a Twitter. The handle is at Miss Trainer's Class. And my Instagram handle for my classroom is the same. I also have a little classroom blog at museedulove.blogspot.com.
My Twitter handle is at Art with Miss K. That's at ArtWithMsK. And my blog is artwithmsk.com. Please come visit me.
Molly, Kelly, thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com.